Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where your host, Ethan Reyes, gives you an in-depth view of some of the best and brightest companies operating in the small cap space today.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
Hey there, gurus. I'm talking today with Michael Nistorescu, CEO of Cannaverde Pharma, a still private but soon-to-be public cannabis company operating in Latin America. Michael began his career in finance as an analyst, working at Gluskin Sheff & Associates in Toronto, and received his degree in economics and international studies from York University. Today we're going to be talking about the Latin American market in general, Colombia in particular, and the differences when compared to Canada. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm excited to tell the story of Cannaverde and, of course, our team.
Absolutely. We met not too long ago at an investor presentation here in Vancouver, and there was a few things that impressed me about your company. But first, just to start off, give us the elevator pitch. Tell us how Cannaverde Pharma fits in with a greater Latin American cannabis framework and where you're at right now.
Perfect. So Cannaverde Pharma is a Canadian company, and we own 100% of a fully licensed Colombian producer called Green Health. We acquired the company on a share-for-share deal last December, and since then we have added capital to the company in Colombia. So we're fully Colombian in operations. We believe that Latin America, although still early, is a fantastic opportunity for us to be able to bring products to supply in terms of cannabis, both THC and CBD. And as opposed to Canada, where we believe that it's saturated and lots of different licensed producers in the space, we believe that Latin America is a space where we can grow as a company. Our cost all in is about 10 cents a gram versus the more expensive Canada, where we have $1.50, $2, depending on the jurisdiction, depending on where we are. We use the natural sun conditions. We use the natural wind. We believe that Colombia is the best place to grow when it comes to the environment. And of course, we have access to labor costs that are much lower than in the Northern Hemisphere. So the minimum wage is amenable. We have a government who understands the capital formation that can happen in Colombia, and who understands that cannabis can bring in a very large amount of dollars into an economy that's doing great, but could do a lot better. So just all of these conditions, we believe that Colombia is the best place to be.
One of the things that I was sure to ask about in your presentation was about security. We had a bit of a back and forth there. And, you know, one of the things I feel that people don't really understand about Colombia is, you know, they've seen too many Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, or perhaps read about the situation in Venezuela and don't quite understand. They might think it's Syria, for example. You know, Colombia, not something that comes up too often unless it's, as I said, an action film. Tell us a little bit about the situation there, the precautions you're taking to make sure your product is secure, and just educate us a little bit and our viewers who may not know too much about the space.
Colombia has changed dramatically in its security parameters over the last, I'd say, 5 to 10 years. Of course, the mining companies, the Canadian mining companies, used to have a security detail 10 years ago. And our CFO, Paul Robertson, who's been in country for the past 10 years, started with a security detail. And now we take taxis. We don't have any security implications outside of different areas that you might lose your cell phone or your wallet. So I have traveled throughout Colombia from Bogota to Bucaramanga, where our operations are, to Cartagena, to Cali, and we have never had any security issues. The travel industry has expanded dramatically, whereas from Canada, you can have flights Toronto to Bogota in the $500 range. Tourism is an important aspect of the Colombian economy. We obviously take precautions when it comes to our operations in Bucaramanga, the same that Canadian companies take precautions here. So we have security parameters that we have agreed with the various ministries. And obviously that's more to do with the theft of our cannabis, as well as with the security implications of moving it from point A to point B. Outside of that, we're extremely excited about the Bucaramanga, which is one of the safest areas in Colombia. Obviously, Venezuela has the situation there has been incredibly hard, specifically when over a million Venezuelans have come into Colombia. Colombians have opened their doors, but at the same time, it's difficult to have that many people. And obviously, they need access to healthcare. They need access to a place to live. They need access to jobs. But it's been difficult. But of course, it's been a country that's tried to help as much as they can. But when it comes to security, we do not have a problem. It's changed dramatically. We've just had some investment bankers with us on a trip to Colombia, and they were pleasantly surprised and are ready to sing the gospel in terms of people going to Colombia. It's been a dramatic change and a welcome one.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful country. Walking around Bogota, I felt as safe as I would walking around, say, Miami. Or I remember it in the presentation, you said you'd be a little bit more worried walking around southern parts of Southern California than Colombia.
Exactly. So there are lots of tourists from the U.S., from Canada. You see teenagers and with their families. You see girls and guys in their 20s and 30s going to Cartagena, which is a beautiful place. So it's dramatically changed. And obviously the peace deal with the FARC, that helped a lot. And Colombia now understands that in order to be successful, security must play a vital role. And tourists and foreigners are protected. So you rarely hear cases of anything happen. Of course, if you go looking for trouble, you will find it regardless of what jurisdiction you're in. But outside of that, we are extremely comfortable with the security parameters in Colombia.
So whenever I talk to people in the business, the people putting these deals together, Michael, they all tell me the same thing. If you're putting a weed deal together now, it's too late. The buzz has come and gone. Latin America, a little bit different than Canada. The legislation's still being developed. We haven't seen full rec. Tell us a little bit about late starts and what it means for a company getting into the still developing Latin American cannabis market.
So most Latin American countries have legalized medical cannabis. Now, some are still writing the rules, and it's the progression of the legislation has been faster in others, in some jurisdictions than others. Colombia has legalized medical cannabis, but as of right now, dry flower is not something that we can partake in. So everything is a derivative, either an oil or an isolate, both CBD and THC. So Green Health Colombia, which is our fully owned subsidiary, is licensed to cultivate both CBD and THC, to extract and to domestically distribute as well as internationally export. In Colombia, the licensing process is onerous. It takes some time. But what the important aspect of it, and this is a barrier to entry, is that each company must go through an agronomic evaluation of their varieties. Otherwise, they need to find cannabis to grow somewhere else from licensed companies that have gone through the agronomic evaluation. So although we have lots of licenses as well in Colombia, in order for a company to be fully able to commercially produce medical cannabis, the going through the steps is fairly onerous, and you must have the ability to have registered varieties. So we are very close to a registration of our varieties and therefore able to commercially produce sometime in 2020. Given that, Latin America, we were pleasantly surprised, specifically in Colombia, that the adoption of cannabis is less smoking for now on the legalized aspect of it and more towards the wellness benefits of it. So topicals, creams, and products as such, and obviously, just as in Canada before legalization, there was a black market in terms of some of these benefits in products. As of right now, we are not ready to talk about edibles and ingestibles, just like Canada wasn't ready to legalize last October and just did so this year. But a lot of people understand that the benefits of both CBD and THC for pain management, for sleep, for dermatological benefits are there. And we were pleasantly surprised to learn that if products were available to them, people would use them. But obviously, we're very, very early in the game, and there still needs to be educational campaign for people to understand that cannabis is not a drug that should be illegal, but rather a drug that can benefit a lot of people with a lot of different conditions. And we're still learning what those conditions are and how we can play a part in understanding and building those products.
You're listening to the Equity.Guru podcast.
Just a quick note to tell you, sorry to interrupt your interview, but if you want more of these, you need to go to your podcast player, whatever that podcast player is, and go and subscribe to the Equity Guru podcast. You can do that through iTunes. You can do it through Google Play. You can do it through all the places. Equity Guru podcast. Do it now.
Welcome back.
Colombia is a country which has had its own struggles with, you know, the war on drugs and a longstanding war, which you alluded to, with the FARC. So it's definitely taking a little bit of a shift here to get their heads around that. I wanted to ask you, I read somewhere that up until about 2018, Michael, you didn't have to prove the origin of the seeds that you were registering in Colombia. That's changed now, I believe. One of the things I've read is that U.S. and North American seed strains have sort of struggled to adapt to Colombian soil. Can you tell us some more about the challenges of Colombia? And I don't know if it's just sort of like a, you know, from cultivation standpoint, regulatory. What are some of the difficulties there for someone setting up shop?
So you are correct in the sense that before December 31st, 2018, the government, so basically any varieties that were in the country at the time could be put forth for registration. Anything after that is a lot more difficult. So everyone rushed to have or to search for these varieties in country. So for someone today going through the licensing process, the ability to register seeds and have seeds put forth to go through the agronomic evaluation is not there. We haven't looked into that because we don't need to, because we pre-registered enough varieties with the Colombian Agricultural Institute for us to be able to commercially produce anything that the market requires of us. So that is difficult and definitely a barrier to entry. So for someone that didn't go through that process today, they would have to ask a licensed producer that has already registered their varieties to give them one of those varieties to grow. And obviously there's a cost element there in terms of that. You are correct in the sense that some varieties prefer different jurisdictions. So when we search for varieties within Colombia, we focused on varieties that have been grown there for a long time, or varieties that were grown in climates that were similar to the country. So obviously California, Southeast Asia, Spain, and obviously the reason we're going through an agronomic evaluation is to decide out of our strains which one works the best in that environment. So that is what we're learning, and we have an idea of which ones are suited to grow in Colombia, and we're ready to commercially produce those when the time comes.
I feel like I've gone about this a little backwards, forgive me. Putting it into context for some of our listeners who are more familiar with their exposure to the Latin American market has been through Chiron and our coverage of them. Are you also going the pharmacy route, or is there another sort of avenue you'd like to go?
So in Colombia, because it is medical now, and there's been conversations about legalizing recreational cannabis in the country. So obviously we have two countries now that are fully rec, Canada and Uruguay. We believe Mexico is close. And we know that the Colombian legislators, some of them at least, have had conversations about the legalization of cannabis in Colombia. But for now, we are strictly focused on medical. So obviously THC must be done by prescription. So it almost forces all of the players in Colombia to go through the pharmacy route, and a doctor must prescribe it. CBD, on the other hand, the rules are a little bit easier to deal with in that you don't need a prescription for topicals. But in order to get registration of a product that's ingestible, that is a much harder process. Obviously, we're working through that. As of right now, we don't know exactly how Colombia and Latin America specifically will what products they'll turn to, and how exactly the market will develop. It could be topicals, it could be edibles. We know that, or we don't know what a recreational market looks like in Colombia, whether they be smoking it, whether they be vaping it. So we're still trying to understand exactly how everything will play out. But for now, the pharmacy route is we almost have to, because it is by prescription and obviously formulations of different conditions. And then the CBD route in terms of topicals, and we'll adjust as the market develops and we have registration of edibles going forward. We're open to every single type of strategy to be able to take advantage of our standing and competitive advantage.
It's a very different market. The presence of the Catholic Church, you know, other sort of factors. It does leave one to wonder what a recreational market in Latin America would look like. But lastly, Michael, before I let you go here, I wanted to ask. There's something that really impressed me about your presentation. Was the talk about your valuation. One of the things that you talked about was you mentioned honesty and you know, an importance at the core of Cannaverde to making sure that we're not just going to say this is a $50 million company because of this and that. No. You really hit home the notion that it's really important that you are honest with investors and honest with the market and honest with yourselves about your valuation and just how your company is going to operate. Could you tell us a little bit more about that conversation we had? It's been a while. Could you refresh my memory and tell our readers about why honesty in that sense is so important to Cannaverde?
Of course. Thank you for the compliment. We appreciate it. We are a company that would like to focus on delivering on the things that we said we're going to deliver. And we believe that having a realistic valuation will assist all of our stakeholders in winning or in making sure that they get what they're looking for from our company. As mentioned in our conversation, we have different stakeholders, from our employees to our greater neighborhood in Colombia and Bucaramanga, to our investors, to the government authorities. We want to be responsible in that we're here to grow a company and we're here to grow a company responsibly. We believe that our valuation at $11.1 million is a fair valuation today, and because we simply haven't proven the model yet. We believe that Colombia and Latin America are going to be attractive opportunities for us. But we would like to deliver on the things that we said we'll deliver and let the valuation follow after rather than go the other way around. It's very difficult to do a discounted cash flow on our company because we simply do not know what the market looks like. We know the market's going to be big, but taking full advantage of that market is something that we still have to prove. And at the same time, we want to be able to have everyone that invests in our company being able to exit at some point into the future at a valuation higher than they entered. And unfortunately, in today's market, I think that we ran away with it a little bit in terms of valuations. And we believe that we need to do the things that we said we're going to do for us to gain the valuation that we deserve. And if we deliver on operations, if we deliver to our stakeholders, if we're good to our employees, then that valuation will follow, and we're more than comfortable to be valued low and have everyone that's ever invested in the company being in a positive light.
I think in a market which regularly sees companies trading at 20 to sometimes 40 times sales, I think it's refreshing for investors to hear about a company which goes by the old mantra of promise a little, deliver a lot.
Exactly. And when we're ready, we believe that once our operations are in place and our contracts and our focus is to be revenue positive as soon as possible. Although obviously there's a dilution aspect to it, the lower the valuation, the more we dilute. But as we focus on revenues and focusing on covering our expenses through the revenue creation, then we'll have less dilution later on. So really, it's almost the same thing as having a higher valuation but less dilution. And we're happy that cash flow positivity is on the back of our minds, and it's been so since we first started the company and going through the licensing process. So we'll never lose sight of that, and our goal is to be revenue positive as soon as possible, and then cash flow positive.
There you have it. And you're going public in the very near future. Am I correct?
We are, yes. So we're going through the, we've signed a definitive agreement with the CPC on the TSX venture. We are ready with our filing statement sometime this week to send it to the exchange. And then we'll make a decision as to whether we go public in November sometime, although most likely we'll be public in the new year. Let's say January, February. We're raising a little bit of capital here as well to get us to revenue positive. We're excited about that. And we'll do it responsibly rather than rushing to market at a time where we're possibly not ready or the market is not conducive to it. So we're going public right around the corner, and we'll do so in a responsible manner.
Responsible growth, accountable management. There you have it, folks. Michael Nistorescu, CEO of Canaverde Pharma. Michael, thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to A Closer Look with Ethan Reyes. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.